Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you everybody for listening in on this. Part of this is going to be about networking. Some of it's going to be about design. Slides are a little messed up, by the way. Just as a quick warning, because I live in Stockholm, hence the Swedish accent, and left there about 24 hours ago and flew to Frankfurt, but missed the flight to Dublin. So they suggested I go to Copenhagen to grab the flight to Dublin. So I went to Copenhagen, but I missed that flight to Dublin. And so they suggested I go to London, and I went to London, and they said, you can absolutely catch a flight to Dublin in the morning. I also discovered something funny, and that is that crack between an airplane and the walkway, a MacBook Air fits exactly in it. So you will see unstyled slides left and right here. I'm with a company called Ericsson. I've been there about a year and a half, and I've been running what they now call cloud, which of course, you know, is interesting. But there's a lot of new interesting sort of people there. Before that, I was off for about a year, and then before that, I spent a decade as the CTO and founder at this company called Joyent, the people that ruined Node.js. So Ericsson, just to give you a little bit of a thing there, it is a 139-year-old Swedish multinational headquartered in Stockholm. We do have about 120,000 people in 187 countries, which presents some interesting challenges, of which there's about 25,000 in R&D. The group has made a lot of things over the years. So, like, for example, a colleague of mine that lives in a 19th century home in Stockholm's got an Ericsson lock on his door. But, you know, largely known as sort of the largest people responsible for the bad telecom space. But also happens to be about the fifth largest services and the fifth largest software company by revenue as well. Now, the view of the world, just to explain why we started kicking off a lot of things having to do with data center facilities from the bottom up, as well as all the hardware that goes inside of it and everything else, is, you know, most of the world is sort of this upper riot. It's human beings on a device doing voice media messaging. So you could think, for example, of Facebook as a media messaging platform. And when you start thinking about the future, there's a couple things that we do know. We do know that there are going to be more devices than humans. And there's actually a lot of things that we're working on where the device is the end user. We know the two use cases there. One use case is they'll just be collecting a ton of data and upstreaming it. And then other ones will be collecting data, bringing it up, making a decision based on that data, and change the behavior of the device. They'll be functioning as a control system. So those are sort of the two emerging use cases. And as an industrial company, you know, we've been sitting around with a bunch of guys that do mines and boats and oil rigs, in addition to sort of the telecoms, trying to work out largely this. Now, as I'll show you in a couple things, on the hardware side, the company does radio access. I mean, that's pretty much what almost the whole entire bulk of the business is, 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G radio, and then soon to be 5G, you know, radio. And that infrastructure is an interesting infrastructure. It's got millions of points of presence in 187 countries. And it does tend to work. You know, usually when it doesn't, someone hasn't bought enough of it, I guess. But you know, you can generally buy a phone and leave the phone store and the phone just works. And you go around the world and the thing works. And so it is a pretty good-sized 187-country, massively distributed, at-scale, secure infrastructure. Now, even when you look at our existing customer base, there are, and we sort of loosely call them central offices, but they range from the base station sites themselves to central offices to metro pops to, you know, other sort of facilities. There are tens of thousands of those. I mean, there are millions of base station sites, tens of thousands of central offices, and then thousands of data centers. And it's fair to say within that part of the infrastructure is not ready for that world in the bottom right. You know, for example, if we go from predominantly downloading media to predominantly uploading data, then just sort of like everything breaks. But the interesting thing is, if you look at available real estate, there's a ton of real estate. You know, so even if you take, you know, the two largest operators in the United States and you look at their base station footprint, you could put about 2.5 million CPUs and about 30 exabytes of flash storage inside of all the base stations deployed just in the US. And you know, that's roughly 2 times the size of the enterprise storage market. So there's real estate there. And then these types of facilities that live off there range from 100 years old to, you know, brandish new, but it's fair to say that they're not sort of one platform. So as I was saying, the bulk of the business has been mobile networks. And so, you know, those, you know, outside of about 5,000 of us or so that are doing some other things and another 5,000 that are about doing some other things, most of the 100 and, you know, 10,000 people that are left have just been rolling out 4G and keeping 3G up and running and so on like that. We have about 3 billion end users on our products. We also run a very large managed services organization. So there's about 1 billion people on networks that we run. And so the company directly manages right now about 40% of all global mobile traffic. So when we started thinking about, you know, on this quote-unquote data center and cloud side, and should we make other hardware, and what does data center networks look like, you know, that was on one hand, you know, this realization that, you know, at the point in time when I came on board, we had 952 quote-unquote data center facilities globally. And then we had all the facilities that all the other stuff was running in for all the other networks we were basically running, and didn't really want, you know, 1 billion end users on that type of stuff. So this is an example like the type of hardware that we've historically made. That's a small radio tower. See, it's on concrete and has a tower. And then there's little ones, and then there's like really little ones. And there's ones the size of a smoke detector that go inside of buildings. And so, you know, the interesting thing is there's one in France. They look very nice in France. And then there's very, very sort of big ones like that. So the interesting thing I found within the company is there's like people that make stuff inside of there. And so, you know, the radio volumes were rather large. And, you know, it's mainly ARM chips inside the radio thing. So a radio board typically, say, has 24 ARM chips on a board and goes inside of there. So if we decided to start making a lot of data center components, what could we reuse out of the radio volumes that would be interesting? The other one is that we have been or still part of the entire value chain. So some of these components we designed, some of them we manufactured. Some systems we design, some systems we manufacture, and very often, or pretty much all the time, there's an Ericsson logo on it. We've largely gotten out of a lot of this. We don't manufacture really components outside of digital signal processors and so on like that. We don't do those anymore. And then I at least got us out of the system manufacturing business. But we still have factories in places like Brazil and parts of China and stuff like that, because you have to have them there. But right now, a lot of the servers I'm building, I'm actually building in Sweden and putting them in data centers in Sweden made. So the data center, we tend to be more like an ODM that puts our logo on it. And so about 2 years ago, we had a couple things sort of kick off. An effort within the company around redesigning really a server plus storage plus networking and take into account a lot of the things we're doing on the radio side. One of which is we figure that since so many people were building data centers in Sweden and we're in Sweden, we might as well build data centers in Sweden. So we decided to build two 40,000 square meter facilities in Sweden and then one in Canada as well. We also took a look at our own server storage networking consumption within the business, meaning even within the managed networks and everything else like that, you know, and it turns out that, you know, we're, you know, if you take sort of a typical top server maker, we're something like 3.5-4% of their top line. So it turns out we were spending billions on that as well. And then, you know, my group, which is now called the Cloud Group, was historically responsible for making all common hardware platforms for the company. And so we'd been making these two-post DC powered throw off a building, pee on, and it will survive type sort of boxes. as well as the networking equipment. And then we had spent a lot of time converging that into one sort of platform as well. And so when we started thinking around some new system designs and some new things we could take advantage of, it was really from that perspective of pretty large-scale internal use, you know, so basically doing about $1 billion a year of internal replacement, you know, where we wouldn't basically go spend that with other people. And then trying to take some of the good things about telecom, some of the good things about that, some of the good things about radio, and so on. So, you know, could we take some interesting radio components, bring them into the data center? We started working also with Intel predominantly on the rack scale and the disaggregated type system approach. And then started, of course, bringing a lot of us more on the web scale side as well, so we start combining this with a lot of the best web scale ideas. You know, and so, we'll skip that slide. So where we ended up then is, and I'm going to show you a bunch more details on this system. So we ended up not changing the form factor of the rack right now, and sort of going with just a 2U chassis that basically takes half-width sleds, or full-width sleds, but basically half-U's. And then the thing we built the little box up there. To show you the other sort of details inside of it. So if you look at this thing, this is a big picture. And this, by the way, it was like we just launched this like 6 weeks ago, and it's been an NDA project until then. So we don't have real pictures, just stuff off Jason's phone. So this thing's only about that. This is really off my. Thank God I put this picture on there, huh? It's only about that big, and you know, optical's got a bad reputation of being very, very expensive. But you know, this was about $120 to build or so. So relatively small board, and then it's got two 100 gig PSM4 silicon photonic chipsets on it. And then the little black box you see in the back is where, you know, the optical goes. And if we go back, and then it just sort of plugs into the common little module up in the upper right. And so the idea on this was to basically go with one cable in the data center. So don't have SAS connectivity and copper cables and sort of everything else. But we'd basically take a board, and then on it we'd put onboard silicon photonics, just literally soldered right on the end of that board. And then what you'll have is a common optical cable coming out the back. As I'll show you, then on that board, you can put CPUs and DRAM. You can just put CPUs. You can just put DRAM. You can just put drives. You can just put PCIe slots and slot other components in. You can just put a switching board. You can do anything like that. And then this design actually came from our radio control system. So if you look at a typical radio tower, then what comes off and actually connects it to optical transport networks, you know, that's where we've been doing most of the silicon photonics work. So we decided to make a small little board of it and stick, you know, 200 gigabits per second of silicon photonics on the back of every other little board. And then over it right now, one common cable, but it does packet switch Ethernet through a traditional top of rack and typical packet switching network. And then it can do unswitched SAS and PCIe, and we'll be adding other protocols to it through a straight end-to-end optical backplane. And I think the fun part on it was, you know, there's a lot of things about systems like this being really, really expensive, but we managed to actually make them pretty, pretty cheap. And so I think at least the silicon photonic stuff is, excuse me, I'm going to cough. Close yours. On there. Now, the way this is sort of working then is you got a board of disk, a board of non-volatile RAM, boards that have NICs in it, boards with CPUs and memory. Eventually we get to the point where we have boards with CPU and memory separately. Everything's on the common silicon photonics connection. If you look at like right now we basically have the first four. So a board with just NICs, a board with just non-volatile RAM, about to do the board with just NICs, and then boards with CPU and memory together. You know, the reason for this then is, you know, when you're able to do, say, SAS over single mode optical, it means that it functions like a SAS cable up to a kilometer, is what it does. So you can basically go into the back plane, grab 10,024 hard drives that live up to a kilometer away and bring them in as local hard drives. So we've been working with Intel on getting the first bit of the disaggregations done. I think the one that I'm personally most interested in to see what Intel does on the CPU side is when we can finally put CPU and memory on separate boards. So these are basically happening these first four are happening now-ish over the next year. And CPU and memory will be more like, you know, in my opinion, a 2017, 2018. By the way, there was a much, remember when I warned you about ugly slides? There was a really pretty slide on that MacBook Air that's on the ground of the Copenhagen airport. If you look at the pooled then, so the pooled's also gonna happen at different rates. So pooled disk, yep. Pooled non-volatile RAM, you know, happening, you know, probably in the next, you know, about 9 to 12 months. Pooled NICs in about 6 months. memory pooling is going to happen, I think, it'll probably be in production within 2 years. The pooling then becomes important because then you can decide that you want to make a, you know, 40 terabyte a DRAM system. Then some of the memory can be non-volatile DIMMs as well. And then the thing we're prioritizing on the shared side is predominantly shared non-volatile RAM. If you can basically do 48, 96 racks and they all see one common non-volatile RAM pool, then you can start actually designing storage systems in a pretty interesting way. You can actually do 60 nanosecond, fully consistent synchronous replication and stuff like that. So, you know, going on there. Now, if you look at some fabric numbers so far, there's on one of these half-width things, can go up to about 3 terabytes of memory, but it's still 2-socket. SAS happening over optical right now can accommodate about 10,024 drives on a common connection. We can only put about 128 CPUs in a common pool right now. And then that common drive pooling can only go up to about 8 petabytes, but we're working on increasing that radius over time. PCIe, similar thing, you can only basically pull in about 80 PCIes and put them in a common pool on a system. The fabric right now is about 8.2 terabits per second per rack is about what one can do, which, by the way, is enough in a rack. We're trying to, you know, we've gotten the number of nodes we can have in a single sort of software understanding to about the 80,000 number, but we're trying to push it past 100,000 right now. So optical backplanes in the data center are cost efficient and real, in our opinion. Intel's got a little pod manager. We've extended it sort of quite a bit. So a lot of the software that we're doing and parts that we're even starting to open source, a lot of the stuff we had lying around already was oddly enough in Erlang and some C++, but we're also writing a lot in Go nowadays to be cool. Yeah, we are. So there's the systems there, but we're also making it work with all existing service processors. Supporting things like Redfish, you know, for example. One thing we're really looking at is, you know, we didn't want to come out and sort of take a, you know, hey, let's mess with the form factor type approach to start with. But we'll definitely be taking a much, much closer look at a bunch of those. A lot of it then ends up being for common control and data lakes, is pulling all that information from the hardware in yet, because, you know, operationally, when you start thinking about not having a system with a service processor on it to like reboot anymore, then it becomes a little weird. You know, do you have to like actually hard restart a board with just memory on it? If you're going to hard restart, you know, a board with drives on it, are you just cycling the controller? It's not the same as a full board service processor. And so doing sort of quite a bit there. The other thing on that initial standup of the system, you know, I love the question about open source BIOS, because that's, I've been trying to get open source BIOS for like a long time, and open source firmware and everything, but there's current BIOS systems have a lot of proprietary memory code in them that certain chip makers don't want to open source. And some things like that. But I think, you know, a lot of the opportunity here, when you look at initial stand-up, you know, how you're doing BIOS in these systems changes, how your Pixie booting systems changes, what you need from a DHCP system on a system itself changes, you know, what the service processor needs to be changes. And hopefully some of those things actually come out of that. And then the other thing we've been doing too, because we've been putting these in facilities that we're doing, is Ericsson, sort of part of the same investor group overall with like ABB, which is, you know, makes a lot of power subsystems and stuff like that. We use them throughout the data centers. They make those automotive robots as well. And so one thing we wanted to do on the suite of software inside of here is to basically also collect all the data from the electrical systems, the mechanical systems, white space sensors as well, into a common data system and common sort of data lake as well, and start having end-to-end control sort of before you put an operating system down. So we've been pushing forward on that. And then I think, you know, the last thing to basically bring up, and then we can do some questions and get to the panel, is I think the farther out area we've been thinking, and farther out meaning we're going to try and show it to people like next year, but on one hand was that first thing of actually having all the typical hardware management stuff now have to be adopted to a completely disaggregated system on a fully optical backplane. First step was, well, we want that fully integrated with all the data center and facility management underneath. And then the second two big areas of investigation we've been doing, one internal and then one also with ABB, is, you know, are there effective uses of robotics within a data center system? You know, can we actually build very lightweight cages that go on top and you actually have those arms going and swapping, you know, components, no different than those tape robots that you might have worked with. I've worked with tape robots. Actually, a really impressive system. 1 gigabyte tape. A lot of it. I think the other one is when you start going through the data center and looking at all the systems and then sort of, I guess, what you could call down rack, you know, meaning all the electrical, mechanical, white space systems. You know, then you start looking at about 40 plus devices within the data center. And most of those from a data collection and a control system would be perfectly fine on a 10 gigabit per second or 1 gigabit per second network. It's not that much data. And so one thing we've been exploring is for those control planes and the data collection parts across all those devices, can we actually start using LTE within the data center, since we can do in-building LTE and low power LTE and LTE on unlicensed spectrum and so on, and then push that through LTE Advanced and then also finally into 5G. So could we start having, you know, effectively the data, a lot of the data center control be wireless across all components? One of the most important reasons to do this is timing of the systems. And so LTE doesn't have quite the same awesome timing that CDMA had, you know, coming off of GPS and the like. But if you're doing it in building, you can get triangulated timing. So you can have systems that are about plus or minus 4 nanoseconds, from an accuracy standpoint. And particularly when you're doing end-to-end event correlation through all these different logs and all these different devices and all these different layers, being plus or minus 4 nanoseconds is nice. And so that's then sort of the fourth area. So I think one thing, if anyone's interested, I mean, the fun part about this is we don't really have any like vendor legacy in this space. So we've been deciding to just go mess around with some things, but ship them pretty quickly. In the case of the stuff that's actually on with the onboard silicon photonics and those types of systems, we're making those systems available to interesting people, from now throughout this entire year to basically come and take a look at. And I think in particular, when we start thinking around parts of those either showing up with an open compute or showing up with another effort, it's largely because there's really interesting software challenges that has to be addressed inside of there. So that real thing of like, I think us trying to push a completely disaggregated setup within the data center and trying to get as much optical in there as possible in the next few years is a big push for us. And then, like I said, eventually getting to the point where, we're also being able to reuse aspects of things like LTE in the data center. And with that, that's it. We have 5 minutes left for questions. Oh, that's.
Well, so I've seen designs for kind of hooking these kind of components up over.
Is
the mic working?
I think you have to talk on the butt. Let's see him do it. Does it have a butt?
Does it have a mic? Wait.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, so yeah, that was mind blowing. One of the things that I realized is if we could get, boot me up a machine with 400 CPUs and. I know 4 terabytes of RAM. It makes software a lot easier. There's none of this like, let's make a distributed key value store with reliability. No, boom. You we're pushing the complexity down to the hardware and make software engineers.
Well, you're pushing the complexity down to the
software. Hardware engineers know how to build things that always work. Software engineers know how to make things that work the fifth time. So.
It's been because a lot of the software involved in doing that magical stuff with the hardware is pretty. Pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of it's dependent on, what Intel can basically jam into chips. But the idea of saying, hey, I want a computer with 1,024 CPUs and 40 terabytes of DRAM is sort of cool. And a big 8 petabyte drive. But that's actually doable right now, oddly enough. So. Actually, I think the memory that would be doable if you wanted to go like expensive would be on the order of like 288 terabytes of memory. Is at least theoretically possible by what you can put in a pool now. But there's really interesting things when you start thinking about like an operating system image spanning just multiple boards that are held together by fiber, and what happens when there's a little burp and can't imagine what a computer like that would take to reboot, but who knows? We'll see. Haven't put an operating system on one of those yet, but it'd be interesting. That's okay. You know what it is? I think someone deflated that ball. Sorry, that's probably an American joke.
I had the impression that the main scope of the project is to improve architectural flexibility of the platform. Other projects seems to be focused on power efficiency as well. Is that a goal of the project as well?
Absolutely. On one hand, being able to go all optical is a pretty good power savings. Also being able to like exactly dimension the exact system you want and then use it. And then if you're not using it, get redimensioned is good. I think we're trying to target pretty high utilization bits of components. A really good power gain is definitely one of the goals.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.